We are aiming to the strengthening of bilateral relationship comprehensively between Taiwan and Lithuania.
Small countries stand up to an Asian power. It's Tuesday, February 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Join us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Ukraine crisis grows. Journalists part of the Beijing Olympic story. A young Winter Olympic sport grows. The business of oil and opera. A maritime mystery may have surfaced. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A senior U.S. delegation has visited Lithuania in a show of support for the Baltic state in its growing dispute with China over Taiwan. Beijing has blocked imports of Lithuanian goods, and as Henry Ridgewell reports, it has escalated into a trade tussle between the West and Beijing.
Washington is supporting Lithuania in the face of what it called economic coercion by China. The dispute began in 2020 as Lithuania's new government pledged to support what it called freedom fighters in Taiwan and criticized Beijing's human rights record in Hong Kong and Tibet. In November last year, Taiwan officially opened a representative office in the Lithuanian capital, Vilnius.
We are aiming to the strengthening of bilateral relationship comprehensively between Taiwan and Lithuania.
Lithuania said the opening did not affect its policy towards China, but it stoked the fury of Beijing, which counts Taiwan as part of Chinese territory.
From perspective of Beijing, is crossing a line, a real red line on how they approach Taiwan. And this is what led later to Beijing downgrading its embassy in Lithuania.
In December, China effectively blocked Lithuanian imports by delisting it as a country of origin, meaning goods can't clear Chinese customs. Beijing also pressed multinational businesses to sever ties with the country.
And that works not only in some cases for goods that are produced in Lithuania, but also goods that include in their supply chain the components produced in Lithuania.
The European Union accuses China of threatening the EU's single market and has launched a challenge at the World Trade Organization.
We are stepping forward to defend EU's rights. Today we are bringing the case to the WTO.
The WTO challenge will likely take years to resolve. Meanwhile, the dispute is already hitting trade. This shipment of 20,000 bottles of Lithuanian rum was blocked from entering China last month. So instead, Taiwan importers snapped it up. The Taiwanese government has offered a $1 billion credit program and a separate $200 million fund to boost trade with Lithuania. The United States has also stepped in. The U.S. Export-Import Bank signed a $600 million export credit agreement with Lithuania, focused on manufacturing, business services, and renewable energy. But it's not just about money.
Symbolic involvement, of course, supports Lithuania by showing that it's not isolated in its moves. At the same time, it also makes it harder to unravel the situation because it once again puts it in the spotlight.
US officials also held talks in Brussels on joint measures to tackle economic coercion. China, meanwhile, accuses Lithuania of betrayal and says it is trying to hijack China-EU relations. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
As the story develops, you can follow along with us at VOA Asia on Twitter and Facebook and voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Australia reopening to tourists as COVID-19 border closures set to end. Indonesia bus crash kills 13, injures dozens. Papua New Guinea Prime Minister tests positive for COVID at Beijing Olympics. 5 Pakistani troops killed in gunfire from across Afghan border. China's UN envoy says choice of Uyghur torchbearer not meant to deflect Western criticism. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit us online at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Amid ongoing tensions with Russia, the Biden administration is warning that the more than 100,000 Russian troops along Ukraine's border could still launch an invasion at a moment's notice. VOA's Arash Arabisadi has more.
Paratroopers from the United States 82nd Airborne Division landing in Poland. They show support among NATO allies amid an ongoing Russian troop buildup along the border of Ukraine.
Our national contribution here in Poland shows our solidarity with all of our allies here in Europe. And obviously during this period of uncertainty, we know that we are stronger together.
In addition to dispatching U.S. troops to NATO allies in Eastern Europe, Washington has sent $650 million in aid to Ukraine, the most ever to that nation, according to the State Department. Ukraine's government has so far downplayed the likelihood of a Russian invasion. Not so, say top U.S. officials.
We believe that there is a very distinct possibility that Vladimir Putin will order an attack on Ukraine. It could take a number of different forms. It could happen as soon as tomorrow, or it could take some weeks yet. He has put himself in a position with military deployments to be able to act aggressively against Ukraine at any time now.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan added that the United States is still a willing partner in diplomacy should Russia choose a path of de-escalation. The crisis along Ukraine's border is helping forge a rare moment of political unity in Washington as members from both major parties decry a possible invasion.
The conditions are there. It's more likely than not. I think the noose is being prepared. It's around Ukraine right now as we speak. These are dangerous times. Time is of the essence. This would be the largest invasion in Europe since World War II. The time frame, as Jake Sullivan mentioned, is closing in.
Ukrainians, meanwhile, poured into the streets Saturday in a show of strength, vowing to defend their homeland. In Chernobyl, just 10 kilometers from Belarus, the Ukrainian National Guard carries out live fire training. Diplomacy among NATO members and Russia has yet to defuse the crisis. A key sticking point is Russia's demand that Ukraine never be admitted into NATO, a non-starter for the United States. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, those who helped tell the story at the Beijing Olympics are part of the story. Happening now in Asia, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach met with Chinese tennis player Peng Shui on the sidelines of the Beijing Winter Olympics. Peng had accused a high-ranking Chinese official of sexual assault on Chinese social media and then disappeared from the public. She has since denied accusing anyone of assault. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. Many foreign journalists at the Beijing Winter Olympics are telling VOA they have brought burner devices, such as phones and laptops, completely wiped of personal data to help protect their digital privacy while in China. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, that's because China has a long record of surveilling and restricting journalists.
For reporters at the Winter Olympics, this is as much of China as they'll see, in a bubble sealed from the rest of Beijing. COVID-19 policies aren't the only challenge. Another is digital privacy, and journalists are taking extraordinary steps to protect it.
In Hong Kong, I set up a burner computer, which is what we're talking on right now. I have a burner phone. I even have a burner iPad with me just to be doubly sure. So, you know, none of my usual identities are on that. Most of my accounts aren't logged into while I'm here.
It's the cost of reporting in China, one of the world's most hostile countries for journalists.
This is a very surveilled country, and it's run by a government that's known to do a lot of state-sponsored hacking and gathering of, you know, massive amounts of personal data, you know, both internally and allegedly externally.
The Foreign Correspondents Club of China warned media freedom is declining at breakneck speed. It cited growing threats of legal action and state-backed attacks against foreign journalists. So far, those reporting from the Olympics bubble have reported no problems. even if they have limited mobility.
We can operate as reporters in the closed loop without restrictions, but the restrictions inherent in the closed loop prevent us from, doing the kind of reporting that, you know, someone who is a foreign correspondent here would, you know, do year round.
It's a necessary trade-off, says Australian journalist Eric Bagshaw.
Essentially, you're submitting yourself to such total surveillance that there's almost freedom in that. There's cameras absolutely everywhere, but you're not looking over your shoulder wondering if you're being tailed because you're speaking to a Chinese dissident.
But even this kind of reporting has its challenges. During our interview, Bagshaw was interrupted by authorities reminding him of a required COVID test.
I just need to finish this video interview and then I'll come down. I'll be there in 10 minutes, if that's okay. Thank you very much. Bye. There you go. Right on it.
Just another challenge of reporting during a pandemic in China. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
At the Beijing Olympics heading into today's competition, Sweden leads the medals table with 3 gold medals. Russian athletes are currently second in the official table ranked by gold medals. They have 2, along with 3 silver and 2 bronze for an overall leading 7 medals. The Netherlands has 2 golds, 2 silver, and a bronze. Host China has moved up to 4th place with 2 gold and 2 silver. The United States is off to a slow start, beginning the day in 14th place with 3 silver medals. U.S. Olympic figure skater and medal contender Vincent Cho withdrew from the men's singles competition Monday after testing positive for COVID-19. Superstar Mikaela Shiffrin skied out in her first race, giant slalom, in a very disappointing start to her Olympics. Team USA alpine racer Nina O'Brien suffered a terrifying crash during her second run of the women's giant slalom event, suffering a serious leg injury. Follow all of the latest Olympic news with us at voanews.com.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A leaked United Nations report says North Korea is funding its weapons program with cryptocurrency stolen through cyber attacks. The Reuters news agency published the story after its reporters saw and reviewed the document. You'll find this in all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, so does the sport of curling, which has only been an Olympic medal competition since 1998. I had the privilege of watching it in Nagano, Japan. And only in 2018 did the Olympic Committee add a mixed doubles category to the games. But it's a growing sport, and Lilia Anisimova spoke to some people who absolutely love it. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Curling is a unique sport. 2 teams of 4 take turns sliding a large polished granite stone across the ice, using special brooms or brushes to control its movement.
When I was 13 or 14, the 2014 Winter Olympics were underway, and I watched curling on TV. And I remember thinking it was a fun and interesting sport. I hadn't heard much about it before that. So I signed up for curling at the Potomac Curling Club. I only wanted to try. They had a special session for beginners. For about 2 hours, they taught us the basics and then we tried it ourselves. And I loved it.
Catherine Gurianova's parents immigrated to the U.S. from Russia. When she was a child, her parents signed her up for figure skating, but it was curling that stole the young woman's heart.
I think it's a very strategic sport. You have to do a lot of thinking. I keep finding new facets of the game. Lots of sports are strategic, but to me, curling is very special.
In 2019, Gurianova represented the U.S. at the 2019 World Mixed Championship.
The championship took place in Scotland, and it was fantastic. It's hard to explain, but representing your country at such a level, surrounded by sportsmen from so many countries, simply seeing how much this sport unites people all around the world is amazing.
Anyone can try their hand at curling here at the Potomac Curling Club, where Gurjanova first learned the sport.
Sweeping is one of the hardest aspects of curling because it requires a lot of communication, a lot of split-second decisions about if you need to sweep, if you need to not sweep. The idea is to put as much weight as you can while still feeling safe on the broom and then move it as fast as possible.
The coaches here are working to inspire these athletes and to help the sport gain momentum.
The curling club here is to bring the sport to an area that did not have the sport before, middle America, and it is 300 members or so, and it's a chance for them to explore, to learn the sport, and just to become better.
The U.S. Curling Association has 135 clubs across the country, with some 13,000 members. 8 of them, the very best, will represent the U.S. during the Winter Olympics that will take place in Beijing this year, from February 4th to February 20th. For Lilia Anisimova in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story online by visiting us at VOA Asia Facebook. Making headlines in Asia, a COVID-19 vaccination drive for children ages 5 to 11 was launched in the Philippine capital, Manila, featuring a circus-themed center complete with stilt walkers and puppeteers. The government's goal is to vaccinate 15 million children. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a messy Thailand shoreline and the business of Chinese opera are the topics on today's VOA Asia business scene with Chris Casquejo.
Oil washing up on a beach on Thailand's east coast could be the nail in the coffin for pandemic-hit hotels and restaurants, local hospitality businesses recently said. The Thai Navy and pollution experts are scrambling to clean up last Tuesday night's spill in the Gulf of Thailand, where at least 60 tons of crude oil leaked about 20 kilometers off the coast of Rayong Province. Crews in yellow plastic protective suits were seen at Mae Ram Phong Beach, about 2.5 hours from Bangkok, recently cleaning up the oil slick, which began washing up late the previous night. A dozen ships are spraying dispersant chemicals, and so far more than 80,000 liters has been doused over the affected area, the Royal Thai Navy said on Saturday. For struggling resorts and tourism-dependent businesses at Mae Ram Phong Beach and the surrounding area, the pollution and lack of swimmers could spell disaster for livelihoods. Fisherman Nib.
The chemical used to disperse the oil goes down to the bottom of the ocean, and what kind of sea life would we have left? We still haven't recovered from the oil spill 10 years ago, and now it happens again with even a bigger leak.
A pipeline leak in the same area in 2013 led to a major slick that coated a beach on nearby Koh Samet. Dressed in traditional Chinese costumes in bright fluorescent colors, faces covered in heavy makeup, swinging swords, and singing in high-pitched voices, performers of Sai Yong Hong Chinese Opera Troupe hit the stage. Their performance, known as Nyo in Thailand, chronicles the tales of knights and maidens in Chinese folklores. Chinese opera was brought to Thailand by the Teochew Chinese immigrants back in the 19th century. Troupes like Sai Yong Hong perform across the country, where 14% of the population have ethnic Chinese heritage. The Sai Yong Hong Opera Troupe was first established 2 decades ago, but its glory days are long gone, says Ta Choi Abtong, 55-year-old manager and performer. Manager and performer of Sai Yong Hong Chinese Opera, Ta Choi Abtong.
In the past, there were thousands of audiences and at least 100 performers per troupe, but now that number is just impossible.
The COVID-19 pandemic has also had an impact on the art form in Thailand. As the curtain draws and the audience starts to leave, Ta Choi receives the payment for the troupe's performance, the sum of 55,000 baht, which is equivalent to $1,663, then divide it among the performers and use to hire a bus to wherever their next gig takes them. It's not much, but it helps us to fight for another day, Tachai said. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Neptune-like exoplanet has been discovered by an international team of scientists. While sightings of this type of planet are quite common, the scientists say this one, called TOI 1231b, is special because it may be surrounded by an abundant atmosphere. According to NASA and the University of New Mexico, whose scientists are part of the discovery team, the exoplanet orbits a small, cool, and dim M-dwarf star about 90 light-years away every 24 days. NASA reports that TOI 1231b has a diameter that's about 3.5 times that of Earth and has a temperature of 57 degrees Celsius. The planet was detected with data from NASA's Transiting Exoplanet Survey satellite and confirmed with observations by scientists using a tool on the Magellan Clay Telescope at Las Campanas Observatory in Chile. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Maritime experts have clashed over the apparent discovery of a British ship that famously landed in eastern Australia in 1770. The Australian National Maritime Museum said a wreck in Newport Harbor off Rhode Island in the United States has been confirmed as Captain James Cook's HMS Endeavour. Archaeologists in the United States, though, called the announcement premature. Phil Mercer is in Sydney. He floats the details by us.
The Endeavour was deliberately sunk by British forces during the American Revolutionary War in 1778. Australian experts believe what remains of the vessel has been found after years of painstaking research in Newport Harbour. This great historical puzzle, they've insisted, has been solved. They've pointed out that what's left of the hull and other key structural details are almost exactly the same as those recorded for the Endeavour. In the United States, though, the Rhode Island Marine Archaeology Project isn't so sure. It said there was no indisputable data to prove that the Endeavour had been discovered. It described the Australian announcement as premature and a breach of contract. Kevin Sumption, the chief executive of the Australian National Maritime Museum, is adamant the Endeavour has been located.
This, of course, is the vessel that James Cook sailed to Tahiti in 1769 to observe the transit of Venus. And following that, he continued his scientific journey, charting large parts of the South Pacific and, of course, the east coast of Australia in 1770. It's arguably one of the most important vessels in Australia's maritime history.
The famous vessel was originally launched in 1764 as the Earl of Pembroke. It was renamed Endeavour by Britain's Royal Navy 4 years later. The ship was later sold to a private owner and renamed the Lord Sandwich, but was contracted by the British Navy to transport soldiers in 1776 to fight against the American colonists who sought to break free from British control. In August 1778, the British scuttled the Lord Sandwich and 4 other vessels at Newport Harbour to try to create a blockade to stop a fleet of French warships that had sailed in to support the American forces. More than 240 years later, the ultimate resting place of the Endeavour remains in dispute. Cook's visit to Australia in 1770 would be followed by the start of British colonisation in 1778. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue with us online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.